Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Russian President Vladimir Putin has laid conditions for Ukraine that he said would lead to an immediate ceasefire and, ultimately, an end to the conflict. Unfortunately, the West is more interested in escalation and more war rather than establishing peace. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, Stephen Gajic in Belgrade. He is a research associate at Belgrade's Institute for European Studies. And here in Moscow, we cross to Dmitry Babic. He's a political analyst at Sputnik International. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start off with our guest in Belgrade. It's really quite curious as we speak. There is a so-called peace conference going on in Switzerland. It's been advertised for a long time. It's some kind of silver bullet that there is a blueprint out there, and all we have to do is get the Russians to agree to it, which, of course, is farcical. Actually, even mainstream media has cast a lot of doubt on it. What's very interesting to both of you is that Vladimir Putin, again, for the second time in as many months, have basically said, you know, what needs to be done to get to at least a ceasefire, the cessation of hostilities, and to start negotiations. Just to remind our audience, there are basically four elements to that. Kyiv remains neutral, not enjoying any kind of military blocs, remains non-aligned. That's not clear if that includes the EU. That's open to question. Non-nuclear status, that is obviously clear, and the lifting of sanctions. Stephen, this is the starting point. Now, in my mind, in looking at how conflicts come to an end, you have a starting point, like we had the Istanbul process, okay? Essentially, there we have seen this conflict go on much longer than it needed to. Again, we have a blueprint to start ending this conflict. They're talking about something completely different in Switzerland right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the problem is that Russia doesn't have a serious negotiator on the other side. And what we see is some kind of, I'd say, infantile premeditated murders. Because while arming Ukraine, basically sending more and more Ukrainian boys to die, they are singing songs to Olaf Scholz. I mean, this reminds me, they're saying happy birthday to you in Anapa on G7. Now, look at all the scandals, look at what Biden is doing on every, basically, occasion that he's present on. This reminded me all of an interview by a famous musician, Frank Zappa, from 1987. He gave it to CNN's Crossfire. He said, what is the song that you wouldn't let your children listen to? He said, "We are the world." And I said, it's really remarkable how he got the point, because in 2015, on the meeting of the heads of foreign ministers of NATO, they were all singing "We are the world" as they were preparing to escalate the conflict, arming Ukraine. I mean, let's remind everybody that the war actually started in 2015. And that's why I call them childish, infantile, preemptive, premeditative murders. Because,
Stephen, what's really interesting, I'll throw this to Dima right now. I mean, news reports have come out as they were convening in Switzerland, and I found this from multiple sources, not just one, that essentially what they're really willing to negotiate is, now, I don't need a drum roll for this here, food and nuclear safety. Both are important. Yep, I agree. And prisoner exchange. This is what they're going to be talking about. This is not a peace conference. It's essentially a way to isolate Russia. I mean, have you ever heard of a conference ending a conflict where one of the belligerents is not there? I mean, this is beyond absurd. It's infantile, as Stephen has said. Go ahead, Dima.
Well, I agree with you. It's infantile. But let's see things in progress, okay? There are two approaches to peace settlement. The first is to view it in complex. And this is what Russia has suggested. This is actually Putin's approach right now. He said that if we agree that four regions which joined Russia will remain Russian, including Crimea, if we agree that you don't join NATO, then we will resolve a bigger problem, the problem of the conflict between Russia and the West. And even sanctions may be lifted. Okay, in the long perspective, Putin is not naive. He understands that if there is a peace settlement in Ukraine, it doesn't mean that US laws, according to which sanctions were imposed on Russia, will be invalid tomorrow. But again, Putin wants to view it in complex. The Ukrainian attitude in the beginning was the same, but with a minus sign, like Russia must withdraw all its forces, Russia must in fact capitulate, you know, all pro-Russian citizens of Ukraine should be brought to justice, Russian generals should be brought to justice. Basically, this is unrealistic. So it became clear to the Ukrainians and to their Western sponsors before the conference, no one will come to such a conference. I mean, even India is not interested in coming to a propaganda event that will require Russia to capitulate, you know. So they decided to narrow the agenda to issues that are important.
But I'm sorry, Dima, Dima, can't you talk about those issues over a Zoom call?
Well, that's the problem. You know, this was the only way Zelensky could persuade neutral countries, you know, countries of the global south, some of them, to come to this conference. Okay, everyone is interested in nuclear safety. That is important.
Yeah, but Dima, I don't think Zelensky convinced anybody of anything. Stephen, I think it was the U.S. basically intimidating smaller countries, smaller powers. You better show up, and they're going to send some kind of deputy assistant and things like that. I mean, this is what we've seen. This is even in Western coverage of this big non-event. But, you know, Stephen, the issue is here. It's, again, you know, with all of this money and arms from the West being poured into Ukraine, it still has nothing to do with Ukraine. It's all about focusing on Russia, defeating Russia strategically, knocking it off the pantheon of great powers, and to isolate it. None of these things are going to happen. This conference highlights that failure more than anything else.
Exactly. The problem with the West is that it lives in some kind of 1990s nostalgia. So what they want, they want another Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. They want a Hague tribunal for Putin and all the generals. And then they want to impose their peace and a sense of justice, quote unquote. This is ridiculous, of course. The West is actually being isolated, and not even to talk about Ukraine. Ukraine is an object of international relations. It is not a subject. It is not deciding anything. It is being murdered by its friends. You know, there were friends of Syria. Now we have friends of Ukraine. And what they are doing is they are treating them as children, although they are behaving infantile, as we saw on these conferences, singing these song, you know, songs. At the same time, it seems that they can't get over, as I said, they're drunk with the power that they have already lost. It is like maybe it's comparable to a junkie that doesn't have the supply of drugs, but it has a memory of how it was. And that's what the West is constantly doing. I mean, Russia is trying to make a strategic deal. It is not talking about Ukraine only. It is talking about the bigger problem, and the bigger problem is security in Europe. It is the, you know, where NATO borders are going to be. What NATO did is only expand. It expanded in Southeast Europe with several, as I like to call them, banana republics in the Balkans, being basically added without any consent from their citizens, without referendum. When they saw that this was possible there, they did it to Finland and Sweden. I mean, nobody asked the Finns or the Swedes. I mean, there were polls, right? We heard about the polls, but we never saw a democratic process where these countries joined NATO. So NATO has
and,
done...
And Stephen, I think you would agree with me. The European elections that we saw is at least indirect affirmation that the people would like to have a say in the issues of peace and war.
I mean, people are hostages of these elites. And what is more and more obvious is that European so-called elites, European governments, are only vassal bots of Washington that don't have any say. I mean, Scholz Didn't say a word about Nord Stream being bombed by the United States, being destroyed. But he accepts the birthday wishes as if he's going to, I don't know, get a happy meal at the end. I mean, this is so. It would have been extremely funny if we were not all hostages of the situation where it can have a really dire consequence.
Well, and Stephen and Dima, the one of the most hawkish political parties in Europe is Germany's Greens, and look what the electorate gave them on election night. It's really quite extraordinary. Dima, Stephen's absolutely right. The what's the most important issue here? It's not, they call it a peace conference, but they're not talking about peace. As a matter of fact, I mean, I know Joe Biden is a very busy man. I mean, he's got that fundraiser in California. Who would miss that? Okay, but I mean, this is his brainchild. His people created this catastrophe for Ukraine, and he can't even deign to show up. Okay, maybe he'll be looking for a chair. I don't know. But you know, Dima, this is not about trying to bring peace back to Europe. Stephen's absolutely right. How you contextualize it is bringing peace back to the continent. That's not what's at issue here in Switzerland, Dima.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I think Putin chose this time to make this statement. Of course, in order to foreshadow, to show the insignificance of this conference in Switzerland, because Putin's suggestions are very concrete and they really touch upon issues that are important, that interest everyone. Zelensky had to go into details, you know, food, nuclear security, and nuclear security, of course, his suggestion is absolutely unrealistic, you know, give back the nuclear power station to the Ukrainians, to his regime, which is bombing, you know, cities, Russian cities next to the border, which is attacking strategic objects deep inside Russia, which is presumably even attacked a radio station, which was supposed to provide security against nuclear attack. Giving a nuclear power station to an irresponsible regime, of course, that's not going to happen. But I agree with Stephen. I would even say more. The West is nostalgic not just about 1990s, but about 1970s, when G7 were indeed the main economies in the world. So they are speaking, they're saying we are the world living in the 70s.
Well, Dima, I have to jump in here. We have to go to a break. But, you know, singing We Are the World, when you think of the G7, all the great Western colonial powers. That's kind of
exactly.
An interesting comparison.
Gentlemen,
I'm going to jump in
Japan.
Here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. You know, Stephen, you brought up probably the most salient point of this whole issue, about the non-issue of this conference in Switzerland and what Vladimir Putin has announced. Again, I mean, all you have to go to the Tucker Carlson interview. I mean, there's plenty of go to the Kremlin website. I mean, there's plenty. It's very frustrating for me. Is, you know, what do the Russians want? What do they just listen to what they have to say? And you can disagree with it. I have no problem with that. But their position is very, very clear, far more clearer than Ukraine's Western allies. The point you brought up that I think is really important is let's go back to December 2021 when Russia said, look, we want an agreement, a draft, a treaty, an ultimatum, whatever you want to call it. It's fine with me, to the United States and to NATO. What do you bet, my friend? That's still the basis of how this conflict is going to be resolved in Ukraine. It hasn't changed. Go ahead.
Exactly. Instead of actually negotiating, European leaders are doing is they are literally putting Europe at risk. It's going to be burned land if this continues like that, if they continue singing childish songs and actually arming, not even arming, let's say fueling the conflict. Because nothing strategically has changed apart from more men dying on both sides, particularly on the Ukrainian side. And but the thing is that they still think that this is a safe game, that they can watch this from the distance. Whereas Russia has repeatedly said that, for instance, if an F-16 plane flies from a NATO country, that the airfield will be bombed, for starters. At the same time, what we heard from Sunak, from Macron, is that Ukraine should, even from Biden, that Ukraine should be able to bomb Russia proper territory, right? With the weapons provided. I mean, this is ridiculous. And I don't really see what is their point. Maybe they are some kind of a, I don't know, satanic cult that wants the destruction of the world, because I can't find a normal, rational solution within.
Well, let me propose this to you. It's something I've been pondering. Okay, you in the West, in NATO land, they have the vaunted Article 5. That's like their secret sauce. That's their great art. You know, that's their shield. You know, and they go on and on and on about it because you brought it up. You know, let's say there's a NATO airfield in Romania and Poland. Okay, and F-16s take off there. It's unclear what kind of ammunition they have here. Is it nuclear tipped? We don't know. Okay, they're certainly not going to communicate that. But then on the other side is that, you know, the Russians are saying, well, I mean, Article 5's important to you. Okay, who are we to say otherwise? But those planes in Poland and Romania, they're killing our people. I mean, you can talk about your Article 5 all you want, but you know, we have the right to self-defense as well. And that is something that, you know, I don't know, Stephen, this is what makes it so dangerous. Are they really, do you think they can bluff the Russians? Do you think they feel that, you know, after everything that's been said and done, absolute failure every step of the way of their calculation of this conflict here, do you think they're going to bluff their way to victory, Stephen?
I think they will try to, and they've been trying to bluff their way. Because they have this racist assumption that Russians somehow will see the white gods in the West, and out of courtesy, it won't respond. I think that there's a very strange psychological game going over here. And actually, Jeffrey Sachs, you just mentioned Tucker Carlson, he had a really remarkable interview. And he said that they think that they will bluff their way, but they don't get it. They don't get that Russia is a completely different society. They don't get that they have actually awakened, I would say, the vaults of strength that Russia has, that they have really awakened it in many ways, and that the old mind games, the old tricks, are never going to work. And these are the old colonial tricks. The thing is that we are in a problem because these people, they live in a completely separate reality, as if they're autistic. That's the main problem. And the main problem is that, you know, Russia is sending the message, but I guess it is sending the message to the 90% of the world, actually, that is listening to it, so that everybody knows what's going on. We have a lunatic, basically. I'd say that NATO is a collective lunatic that holds its citizens as hostages, and then the rest of the world as hostages too, because what they can provoke damage, but they will never assert global power like this was in the 90s. And that is the whole issue that we are facing now.
You know, Jim, I was just reading some poll numbers. Russians are afraid of the possibility of a third world war, which would be obviously a nuclear war. I don't see the same people asking the hostages, as Stephen calls them, in Western Europe, the same question. But we do know and I don't want to, you know, read too much into election results in the European Union, because, you know, there's so many other, there's immigration going on, there's problems with the inflation, there's a lot of problems, okay? But there's also the issue of being very aggressive when it comes to Russia, talking about conscription. I don't know any Europeans that want to join the army and fight Russians in Ukraine. I think that's delusional here. But I mean, Russians take this very seriously. And Stephen's right. This country, and maybe you agree or disagree with me, Dima, but it's changed in the last 2.5 years. Personally, I think for the better. Dima.
Well, you're right. The country changed and the attitude to the world changed. I agree with Steve. You know, the absence of the peace movement in Europe is stunning. And obviously, these people do believe that we have a sort of a cargo cult. We're not going to hit you know, the white gods. Well, you rightly said that G7, these are former colonial powers, even Japan, you know, Western colonial powers. Okay, Japan behaved in China and Korea in 1930s like a colonial power, like a typical Western colonial power, you know, subjugating people, killing them. Look at history, Japanese themselves acknowledge it. But the point is that everything is done in such a way that there would be no way back. I mean, like Jens Stoltenberg, the General Secretary of NATO, is saying NATO countries are obliged to buy F-35 fighter jets and make them capable of carrying nuclear weapons. What does it mean? It means that F-16s, which will be replaced by F-35s, can be given to Ukraine. So we make sure there will be a disaster. There will be no way back. You are obliged to have it.
Well, then, Dima, I don't know, Dima. I mean, Stephen, F-35, I'm not a military expert, but I know F-35 is a better, more modern plane than the F-16. F-16s came into service when I was in high school, everyone.
But
that
the
was
point
a long time
is
ago.
That
was a long time ago. Hey, hang on, Dima. I you know, these F-35s, Stephen, they'll burn like any other Western NATO plane. Okay, and I think that's one of the hesitations. You know, the United States, you know, doesn't export many interesting things anymore outside of arms. And watch those burning over the skies of Ukraine. I don't think so. I think it's again a lot of bluster and bluff. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, they will be the big balls of fire, as Jerry Lee Lewis once sang. The problem is, you've just mentioned the European elections. What I see is a path to fascization of Europe. So instead of getting, let's say, sovereignist parties who used to have a completely different attitude towards Russia, what we see is Melonization, the process of, you know, what Giorgia Meloni in Italy did, because at the beginning, she was, you could even argue that she was pro-Russian in a sense, and now she's a champion of NATO. She went to Kiev giving support constantly and so on. So at the same time, it seems that the Americans are letting, you know, Sieg Heil Salus and whatever. It started in Ukraine, but now it's spreading to Europe.
Yeah.
But instead of these parties being against NATO and actually for the liberation of European countries from NATO, from Washington's occupation, what is happening is they're letting them have the same ideology, but with the different content. Let's say it's like a genetically modified fascism.
Gain of function.
You just mentioned whether Europeans are going to fight the war. Maybe not at this point, but I think that what the Americans want is not the Americans, the military industrial complex, not even Pentagon, I would say, but really the industry. They want to fascize Europe, to brutalize Europe, so that it can get the wounds, you know, that
yeah,
are
but
important.
The point is here, it's really interesting, is when you're listening to these failing European leaders, and just about everybody, every single one of them was crushed electorally in the last election here. But Dima, it's very interesting, you know, Stoltenberg is, you know, he's General Secretary of NATO. I mean, it basically formally a bureaucratic job, but now he's talking like von der Leyen. I mean, he's like somebody of power. He's never been elected by anyone in the European Union and not by NATO countries, okay? But what is being pushed right now, because neoliberalism is utterly failing all across the Western world, is you need a war economy. They say the Russians are on a war economy. Well, no, Russia isn't on a war economy, but they want to do that. It crushes dissent. It picks political and financial winners. Okay, and what you can do is you can start closing down any kind of open discussion about what policy should be. You know, COVID was kind of an interesting prototype of this. Go ahead, Dima.
I will say something that will make a lot of Westerners angry now, but I think we have to say it. You know, no one played a bigger role in rehabilitation of Stalin in Russia than the Western governments which are in power now. You know, Stalin called German social democrats social fascists unfairly, because they also suffered under Hitler, and it was a mistake. But when I look at the social democrats today, you know, These people who send weapons to the Kiev regime, who say absolutely awful things about Russia and China, by the way, these are social fascists. And in fact, what happens now, Steve is absolutely right, we have a new attitude to so-called fascist parties in Europe. Instead of fighting them and kind of ghettoizing
Dima, I'm sorry,
them,
we've just about run out of time, but I'm going to have a compromise with both of what you just said. It's called the Ukrainianization of the West. That's what we're
exactly.
saying. Gentlemen, I want to thank my guests in Belgrade and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.